Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Optus Sport Football Podcast. I'm Mark Schwarzer, joined today, as always, by Phil Kitromilidis. Phil, how's it going, mate?
Hello, Schwarzer. I'm well, my friend. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good to see you wearing a cap right from the off, so I can't give you any stick about that big buff of a hair of you normally you got.
Yeah, last week you were actually really quite rude about my hair, so yes. Today I thought I'd just stick a cap on and avoid the unnecessary insults. So,
I mean, me of all people, right, with that receding hairline that I'm giving
you. Well, I didn't want to say anything, mate. I thought we'd keep it friendly today, but yeah,
I just get in there before you did.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're joined this week by...
That receding hairline looks like Tottenham's back line. It's pushing up way too far.
And, of course, and rightly so, this is the perfect introduction. Jay Bothroyd's there. You can hear him in the background. Jay, look, I have to go firstly. This is the first time we've had you back since the Antoine Griezmann is a luxury player comment and or Griezmann gate, whatever you want to call it. There's a rumour going around that you've actually rung Phil up a week about so afterwards with some more information, more stats to back up your Antoine Griezmann debate. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. No, because we spoke about it. I messaged him because I wanted to do my homework. Obviously, he's a great player. So, you know, when he messaged us on Twitter, it kind of come across like I was disrespecting him, and I'm not. But there are some pointers as to why I said what I said. And I think people will see it when it comes from that point of view as an attacker. As an attacker, I want to see my forward work hard up the pitch, not in the defensive half or in the midfielding half. And when I said luxury play, I mean, I was winding you up, Phil, and I had you a kipper there, mate. I had you a kid.
And all of the Antoine Griezmann fans as well.
Yeah, exactly. They went crazy. And now I still get stick for that. So, okay, let me apologise to the fans and Antonio. Only joking, Antoine Griezmann.
To be fair, the first podcast we did after that, Mark also had done some research and also came with some statistics to try and back up that point of view as well. So you weren't the only one, Jay, trying to have a look and back up that.
But one thing I would say is Lino is more effective in an attacking position and he's a wing back. So, I mean, explain that to me.
Right. I think we'll leave this for another podcast because otherwise we could go really left field on this one. I will just say, though, I did call Jules out the next podcast that we had because he said that Antoine Griezmann covered 12 kilometers average per game. It wasn't true. There's only one game he's done that in the Champions League and that was it. So anyway, let's move right along. We're talking about the Premier League, of course. The title race, it's been thrown up in the air, kind of-ish, maybe. Certainly advantage Manchester City. Liverpool losing 1-0 to Palace. Arsenal losing 2-0 to Villa, both at home. I mean, did we see that coming, Phil?
I just want to say, first off, like, thank you to Manchester City for lulling us into this false sense of insecurity, making us believe that there was a really tight title challenge, making us get all excited, thinking it's the best Premier League title race in years. It's going to happen. Arsenal are better. Liverpool have learned from last season. Arsenal have learned from last season. City are worse. And then City are just going to go and win it anyway. So at least they made it interesting for the last few weeks. They gave us something to talk about because it feels like this is the weekend where it's over. It feels like this is the weekend. And it's only 2 points, the difference that Manchester City have. And that's so ridiculous to say. But let me just quantify what I'm saying, because I feel like it's over. It's not just the 2 points. It's the emotional toll of losing for Liverpool and Arsenal. You could see the players, the fans, they felt that they've let it slip this weekend. And Manchester City on Saturday got their business done 5-1 against Luton without some key players as well. And they just know what to do in this situation. And I hold my hand up. And I said on this podcast many times, oh, you can't just say City are going to win it because they're City and they've done it before. And I was the first one to say that's not a valid excuse. But I was wrong, because they have done it before and they know what to do and they can deal with the pressure. And we've seen Arsenal not be able to deal with the pressure, and Liverpool were so rushed and desperate in that game against Crystal Palace, like they were against Manchester United last week. So yeah, still keep watching, guys. It's still going to be exciting, but it does feel like this is the weekend where it all turns in Manchester City's favour.
Jay, your beloved Arsenal. I mean, like, do we even go there? Like, is it sensitive still?
Yeah, of course. To be honest, though, we had this conversation before where I was like, for me, Arsenal seemed to do really well against the sides, like Man City in that game there. Great point. They went there and they'd done a job. But then for me, it's always these games that are against the likes of, you know, Aston Villa, where they seem to slip up. Now, I looked at the game. I watched it very carefully. Arsenal started pretty well. But then as the game went on and on and on, it just seemed like they was losing belief. And then I have to say, Emery's tactics were spot on. They really was. They went in at half time and, you know, you think that Arsenal were going to come out, got all guns blazing like we've seen in the past. And it was Aston Villa that came out with that urgency and that belief that they could go and win the game. So as much as, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan, like, you know, I'm one of the biggest, but it was really, really disappointing to see something similar to what happened last season when they was drawing games and losing games to the likes of Southampton, Bournemouth, West Ham. It just seemed like the same kind of thing again. And it's like, how are we going to get over the line? And I always come back to, we need a striker. We need a striker, because there's chances where Saka's flashing balls across the box, Trossard the same. No one's in there to get those tap-ins. And I said from the beginning, with Jesus, fantastic player. He does a lot of hard work. He comes deep. He's great on the ball, like we see during the week in the Champions League. But he doesn't get enough goals. And that's what Arsenal need, a goal scorer. Once we get that goal scorer, I think that will be what can get Arsenal over the line.
I think it's interesting that how that all of a sudden you're going to a game where you've missed a couple of chances. Mind you, Martinez pulled off some world-class saves as well. Let's not beat around the bush.
Sorry, Mark, let me just interject there. That is not a world-class save. That's a poor miss.
No, it's a world-class
save.
I'm sorry. It's a world-class save.
It's a poor miss. He had the whole other side of the goal to score it.
Jay, how often do you see a goal go in there? How often do you see strikers put it in the middle of the goal, put it to the goalkeeper's side, the goalkeeper doesn't react? Martinez just throws himself. It is a world-class save. I don't care what anyone says. Yes.
You think that's a world-class save over a bad miss then?
I'm just saying it's a world-class save. Yeah, okay. And another day, the attacker should put it elsewhere. Of course, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. And how often do they slot it in like that and everyone goes, great finish, cool finish? That's the tap-in.
Yeah, but that's the point though, because that's the point. 95% of the time, you will score that. And that is the kind of, from my point of view, being a forward, that's the easiest kind of finish where all you have to do is deflect it.
But that's why it's a world-class save. That's why it's a world-class save, because 95% of the time, it's a goal.
Okay, so I'll say it's a good save, but I think it's a poor miss.
I think you're underdoing the magnitude of the save. I think it's world-class save. Poor finish. Okay, I'll give you that. But it's certainly a world-class save. The thing about it as well is that, you know, Arsenal have been banging in goals left, right, and centre for the last couple of weeks. No one said anything about they need a striker.
They're the second top scorers in the league. They're outperforming their expected goals as well. So they've got 75 goals. City have got 76. So I know what you mean about having like a focal point to the attack, but it hasn't actually been that problem this season, has it?
I think that's been the problem in the biggest games. Mm-hmm. And like we see yesterday, I think it's been a problem. Even against Man City, it was a problem. Like, Arsenal could have nicked that game. Trossard, I mean, a better pass. It wasn't. Do you know what I mean? He didn't even pass it. He went for goal. Like, I think just the details is what Arsenal struggle with. And yes, like you said, they are the highest scoring team. But I just feel like every top team, every team that wins something generally, unless it was, I mean, Man City before Haaland came, yeah, they still won. But at the end of the day, when you look at all the top teams, they have a striker. They have a striker to get those bits.
Let's not go away from the fact as well. I know we're talking about title race and everything else, and Arsenal's about Arsenal, but Aston Villa, you mentioned before, were exceptional. And Unai Emery, 6 points out of the two games against Arsenal. I mean, what a tactical genius, and how brilliant has he been for Aston Villa this season? So, and he has proved it before. Villarreal, everywhere he's been absolutely brilliant. So, unbelievable performance and unbelievable result again.
Social media people, get ready. Okay, they've already clipped up a couple of my rants on Unai Emery this season, so maybe this one will go on the socials as well. But Unai Emery is such an extraordinary manager, and I'm so glad he's being vindicated, because his teams play with bravery on the ball. They are daring. We saw this high line as well against Arsenal. They get players forward into attacking positions. They are an exciting team to watch, and they knew exactly what they had to do, particularly in that second half against Arsenal, because the first half they weathered a bit of a storm. Mikel Arteta actually said after the game the first half was one of their best first halves of the season. Maybe that's getting carried away, but they were good. They had chances. Villa weathered that storm, and in the second half they looked really, really solid, really dangerous on the break, and they knew exactly what they had to do, and that is Unai Emery. Once again, he's won at Arsenal, he's beaten them home and away, he's won against Manchester City in stunning form, he won away at Tottenham as well. He's had some really, really big performances this season from his team, and I think that they are the fourth most consistent team in the Premier League at the moment. And if they get Champions League, you can't argue with that, because they will have deserved it. We've seen some stunning performances from them. I thought this was a brilliant, brilliant showing again, and credit to Unai Emery once more.
That's a brilliant audition. That's a brilliant audition from Phil to be Unai Emery's media manager moving forward. That was an unbelievable description of how well
Unai, call me.
I tell you what was really good as well. You know, Zanolo, he hasn't played off late. He came in and he was unbelievable. He tracked back. He made it difficult for Saka to get in the ball. But then when the ball was played to him, he looked after it well. He took care of it. He was effective in the attacking positions. And then again, Emery, I think his substitutions were at the right time. He brought on Bailey for Diaby, who was playing pretty well actually as well. And he brought on Bailey and he showed that extra bit of skill coming inside, linking up. I think he was fantastic. And like you said, Phil, they play really good football, attractive football. And like, they're playing out from the back with that belief. You can see a team shape there. You can see a philosophy. And I think a lot of the teams that, you know, like when we speak about Man United and whatnot, you don't see any kind of philosophy. Emery's gone into Aston Villa and he's turned things around completely. Now, you know, they're in the Champions League spot and they only look like they're getting stronger and stronger. I think he's done an amazing job. He should be up for manager of the year even, for where he's taken that club.
Tell me about the Ollie Watkins finish, Jay. Did you score any like that in your career? I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, standard. Of course I did. What kind of questions that? But yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
That's a finish of confidence, yeah, right? Though. Because I think a lot of people that don't play with confidence will be trying to like bang that across the floor, maybe across the keeper. But it was great because he knew the defender was going to try and block it. He knew the keeper was going to go down and try and save it. And he just lifted it over both of them. It was a very, very clinical finish. And if I'm honest, his performance overall wasn't great in the second half, in the first half, but in the second half, he just came into his own.
Jay, I want to get your thought on this one. Troy Deeney has just said publicly that he said that Ollie Watkins is a winger trying to be a striker. And that whenever he's in front of goal, bearing down, he doesn't feel confident he's going to score, and also needs a lot of chances to score goals, where he believes that, because he's not that out and out striker. Do you agree with that?
I think I did initially, but I think this season I've seen better. I think he's become more clinical. He's got more variation to his game. I think early on when he was playing as a forward, he would hit things like as hard as he could. Now he's bending things in. Now he's placing it. Now we're seeing dinks. I think that confidence, and I think, you know, by all accounts, I speak to his agent, whatnot, and he said that he really practiced a lot and he dedicates himself to his craft. So when you see finishes like that, I think he's improved as a finisher. I agree with what Troy was saying a few years ago, but I think as in this season now, he's been unbelievable and he scores all kinds of goals. Flicks with his head, he runs in behind, one-on-ones he's been good. He's, you know, he can hit things across goal, left foot, right foot. I think this season, I think he's turned into a finisher.
I liked hearing him after the game when he was interviewed. He said, yeah, I'm going for the golden boot. Like, it was refreshing to hear a striker say that and not say, oh, well, you know, I just want to help the team. He said, yeah, I want to help the team with my goals, but I'm going for the golden boot. It's in the back of my mind and I want to score as many goals as possible. So that's nice to hear.
Is Ollie Watkins on penalties at Aston Villa?
Nope, hasn't scored a penalty all season.
I mean, that in itself is unbelievable because when you look at Haaland, I'm not sure how many penalties he scored, but he scored four
of his 20 goals penalties. Yeah,
exactly. And I'm not even sure how many penalties Aston Villa got. But if he was a penalty taker, he would be, you know, on plus 20, plus 21, plus 22. He'd be the top goal scorer at the moment. So I think his overall game has come on leaps and bounds. And I think that's the reason why he's in the England squad all the time now. There's no doubt about that.
Schwartzy, shall we take the conversation back to Arsenal blowing their title chances? What do you reckon?
That's poor from you, Phil. That's poor from you.
What I want to ask is, can either of you see City dropping any points for the remainder of the season? Got six games to go. They're 2 points ahead. They've got Brighton, Forest away, Wolves home, Fulham and Spurs away, and then finally West Ham home, last game of the season. I personally don't see them dropping points.
The only one that stands out to me is Tottenham. I think Tottenham played them really well and pressed them really well. And they got... It just seemed on that particular day, Tottenham had their number. As in, the tactics were perfect. The players were playing really well. But I think one thing that Tottenham has struggled with so far is Maddison's form when he's come back from injury. He hasn't quite got to the pace of it yet. And I think that's costing Tottenham. But I definitely think all the other games, I think is, I'm not going to say a walk in the park, but they know how to win those games. I think Tottenham's the only one I look at and think, maybe if Tottenham show up on the day, they could win that game or get a result.
It would be maybe the most Spursy thing in the world for them to beat Manchester City and hand the title to Arsenal.
A Spurs fan is calling it a Spursy thing, isn't it? I mean, that's...
Yeah, we know. We know what we are, mate. We understand. We understand where we're at the moment. But yeah, I mean, I think City are fully in the driving seat given the run of fixtures that they've got left. Obviously, Spurs have to play all the top three as well. So they're going to have a big say in the where the title goes. And it just feels like, and I know this is maybe just a little buzzword that doesn't mean anything, but actually, I think it does. It feels like the momentum is now with Manchester City and they are getting on that roll. And listen, Erling Haaland's still missing one-on-ones. He's missing one. He's not in the best form. He's not, even though he scored at the weekend and got a weird assist.
It was a penalty.
Yeah, it was a penalty. And then the first goal where he smashed it in off someone's face. But I mean, when he was through one-on-one as well. He's not in the best form.
Did he celebrate there as well? Did he have a sneaky celebration?
He did. He thought he might get given it, but he didn't.
So he should, because he got me some good fantasy football points. So I'm going with that. I don't care how he scores, as long as he scores an assist. The other team that's in that running for the title, of course, is Liverpool. We mentioned him earlier on, losing at home to Crystal Palace. Let's hear from Jurgen Klopp after their loss.
Yeah, but I cannot pick anybody up in a moment where I feel at myself. I mean, that would be not honest. It's not that I can stand here, feel really average or low or below, and just tell them, oh, but we go for it. That is not... Give me a few minutes. I cannot change the world in interviews. So I need to, as well, time to think about it. So if, let me say it like that, if we play like in the first half, why should we win the league? If we play like in the second half, yeah, we can pick up points here and there, definitely. If we play as good as we can, we will go for it. We decide that, but not now, in the next few days.
So yeah, Jurgen Klopp says if he plays like that, they play like that in the first half, no chance. If they play like that in the second, like they did in the second half for the remainder of the season, they've got a chance. Do you see that, Phil?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, fair enough to Jurgen, by the way, because you could see there, we in the media demand footballers and football managers to immediately come out and speak to us after the game. And often it's very, very hard to be calm after the adrenaline's been pumping. And so it's refreshing for him to say, like, nah, now I can't go and G everyone up right now because I'm not feeling like that. But give us a few days and we'll get back on it. But he did sound really down. He did feel like this was a massive, massive slip up against the team that they should have beaten. And after the Palace goal goes in, I saw the camera pan in on Klopp and he's sort of smiling and he mouths the word, wow, wow. Like he can't believe how badly they defended that goal. And Eze is in so much space. I think Curtis Jones comes across and it's just really badly defended from Liverpool. And the first half, they were like exceptionally poor. They just picked up where they left off against Atalanta, and Palace picked up a little bit of where Atalanta were as well, getting at them, pressing them, not giving them time with the ball, making them into make mistakes. The Liverpool midfield was sort of non-existent, and it was really poor. Second half, they did create chances. They really, really, really should have scored one goal. And I've defended Darwin Nunez on this podcast a lot. I think he's a striker that offers a lot of overall attributes. But if he literally cannot control or score, then I'm beginning to question what he is bringing to the team. And the last few weeks have been really, really poor from him.
Another world-class save. Henderson. And also, let's go, Alisson made him another world-class save as well at the other end. So, I mean, Jay, I know you're going to say you should have put it in the corner, but look, world-class saves. Got to give him credit when it's due.
No, I mean, it's great that Alisson's back. But Atalanta was fantastic during the week, and they seem to have Liverpool's number. I said it during that game, I said, if Atalanta can frustrate Liverpool, then they'll get a result here, because I think Scamacca's a very good finisher. Then I think their overall play suited themselves to get the better of Liverpool. Liverpool didn't have any idea. They were shell-shocked. And it seems like they seem to start games slowly, Liverpool, and then they build up. But yesterday, I think Palace was great rather than, you know, Liverpool are poor, let's be honest, for their standards. But Palace was great as well. They defended really well, as in they were putting their bodies on the line. Mitchell made an unbelievable save on the line with his body. And I just feel like now Liverpool have lost that confidence as well. They lost that belief. Everyone talks about Van Dijk being one of the best defenders ever. But let's be honest. In that kind of game, you want to see Van Dijk pulling people around and getting the line up, being in sync. And it just wasn't like that again. You know, they're not in line. It didn't seem like there was, you know, really communicating with each other well. Robinson, I feel like he's fantastic up and down the left. But sometimes he just has to stay and just say, you know what? Let's just get our line in the right place right now and try and control the game a bit more. I just feel like sometimes with Liverpool, they're too direct and they're too gung-ho. And then it costs them in the end, especially when they don't score them chances. I think the best chance for me was Curtis Jones's chance.
Do either of you feel a little bit sorry for Klopp? I mean, like, they lost to Man United in the FA Cup under like mad circumstances. They've missed out on a semi-final against Coventry because that's what Man United have got. They've lost at home to Palace. They're 3-0 behind in Europa League, which, I mean, literally 17th of March, they're thinking about three possible trophies. Now it looks like most likely they're going to end up with nothing.
Do you feel sorry for Klopp?
I do a little bit. Yeah, I do. I just feel like because he's leaving.
Why?
Yeah, because he's leaving and he's been a legend and he's been unbelievable what he's done. I don't know.
Okay, from a sentimental perspective.
A little bit, yes.
Mark, can I ask you a question? Seriously. When you say legend.
Yeah, right, I know what you're saying.
Is he a legend in terms of what he's done, or is he a legend in terms of managers in the Premier League?
He's a legend at Liverpool, I think. I think the way he's turned the club around when he came in and the energy, the atmosphere, the connection with the fans, I think he's done an amazing job. I agree. The legend thing of the Premier League, where do you draw the line? You know, like, I mean, clearly, Sir Alex Ferguson is a legend in the Premier League, as is Pep Guardiola, of what they've won and how many times they've won the league. Yeah, so there's a few, right? So I just don't see him quite being on that level, even though he's been unbelievable, right? Let's be honest. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, no, I don't feel sorry for Jurgen Klopp not from like a footballing point of view. I mean, they've been doing this for the last few weeks now. They've been conceding the first goal and then they've just about been managing to get themselves back in the game. And that is tiring. That is really tiring when you're chasing a game, as you guys will know much better than me. When you're chasing a game constantly, it's physically and emotionally draining. And Liverpool just seemed a little bit devoid of what we were saying last week, devoid of the kind of patience that you need to think, okay, guys, calm down. We can get back into this. They felt rushed. They felt desperate. And it's the same desperation I saw at Old Trafford. And okay, that's a big game for Liverpool, away to Manchester United. Sometimes the emotion gets the better of them. But at home to Palace, they should have been able to see this out and get the win that you need in terms of trying to win the Premier League title. And in the second, they just felt rushed and desperate again. I keep saying the same adjectives, but it's the same.
I think they've got the stat for that. I think they've scored the most goals in the last 10 to 15 minutes of a game all season. They seem to just always nick a goal right at the end or equalise right at the end. And over the course of a season, you're going to get caught out at some point. Yeah. And at some point is not.
That's it. It's you know, I was saying a few weeks ago, if a team is constantly scoring late on, and constantly winning games in the last few minutes, is that the sign of great team spirit and keep going until the end? Or is it the sign that maybe something actually isn't necessarily working, and if you keep relying on these late goals, then ultimately you're going to get caught out? And feels like that's what happened at the weekend.
It's both, right? I think it's both. Both of amazing team spirit, but also something's not quite right, and it's not quite clicking at the moment. Okay, I got a big one for you. What's the bigger achievement? If Manchester City go on and win another treble, or Bayer Leverkusen going the whole season undefeated across all competitions? They've won their very first ever Bundesliga title. They're in the DFB Pokal final, and they've got the Europa League. So if they win all of those and go undefeated, is that a bigger achievement than City winning another treble?
No, I'm sorry. Is that even a? Is that a trick question?
No, it's just a question. I'm going to throw
it out. It's a good question, I thought, isn't it?
The treble, two times in a row. No one's ever done that.
Right. He's talking about another treble. He's talking about Bayer Leverkusen going unbeaten in the Bundesliga, which Bayern Munich win every single year, winning the Europa League and winning the German Cup. Bayer Leverkusen.
There's only one treble. There's only one double. There's only one treble. Okay, that's Champions League, domestic league, and a cup. Right, so I don't want to hear about the free domestic treble.
He could win it. He could win a European treble. He could use a treble. So the league, the cup, the major cup final, and a European trophy. That's a treble as well.
I thought you were just going to say Bayer Leverkusen winning the Bundesliga undefeated. Is that? I mean, I think you could put that on the same level as Manchester City winning a back-to-back treble. Yeah, but it's Bayer Leverkusen winning the Bundesliga undefeated. How much money has Manchester City spent on this squad? How much money has been spent on the infrastructure of Manchester City to build this global sporting brand that is, the idea is for them to dominate?
Why does it always come back to money? At the end of the day, when you look at Pep, yes, he's spent money, but all teams will spend money. All the big teams will spend money. It's what you do with the money and how you get your team to perform. When you look at all these teams in the Champions League, they've all spent money.
Yeah, Bayer Leverkusen have spent considerably less money than Manchester City. And this achievement to Bayern Munich are so dominant in the Bundesliga. And to win the Bundesliga undefeated, how many points ahead of them are they, Mark? They're 15, 16 points clear or something. They've won it with 5 games to spare. It's ludicrous what they've done.
But there's been a lot of transition at Bayern Munich, let's be honest. They've had a couple of managers. They've had loads
of
players.
They went and bought the best striker in Europe.
I don't care what anyone says to me. That triple, back-to-back Champions League, back-to-back Premier League titles, that in itself is a better achievement than what Xavi Alonso has done. Xavi Alonso, don't get me wrong, is great. Sorry, I need to get this out. What Bayer Leverkusen has done is great. Don't get me wrong, it's unbelievable. But it's not even the third best league in the world. Who are you playing against? Surely there has to be a level of competition that comes into this. And I feel like the Premier League is the hardest league in the world, the Champions League, and then everything else is secondary.
I think the Premier League is probably the most difficult because there's so many teams that could win it, I suppose, more so than the other leagues, right? Bayern winning it for so long. Italy is a little bit different now. Spain is still pretty much 2.5 teams that could win the league, and that's pretty much what happens every year. So I think in terms of the difficulty, I mean, the level of football, there's an argument to say that there's you know, in Spain, in Italy, and in Germany to a degree as well, there is equal levels, right? I also believe, I agree with you, Jay. I think if Man City were to win another treble, that I don't think anything surpasses that. But what Bayer Leverkusen have done is absolutely remarkable. And if they were to go on and win, they've got the hands on the German Cup, and they're walking out of the stadium. They're not quite out of it yet. They're playing against my old team, Kaiserslautern, who are in the second division. I hope an upset. I hope for a major upset, but I think it's unlikely. But it is a cup final, and you never know. But I think it's unlikely. The Europa League, obviously, still a lot to play for. But
I'm disappointed, Schwartzy. I thought a cultured man like you, lived in Germany, is part German, yes, follows the Bundesliga, would realise what a ridiculous achievement this is.
It is.
That will never happen again. It will never happen again.
I'm not disagreeing with you. It is a remarkable accomplishment. But we're talking about a team winning a treble, winning the Champions League, the FA Cup, and the Premier League 2 years running would be off the chart. No one has ever done it before. So I think it still would be too good. The other question I want to ask you is, Pep Guardiola went to Germany, went to Bayern Munich, had all the resources, won the league comfortably, and bossed it and changed the way football was played. Jürgen Klopp was at Mainz, didn't win the league, went to Dortmund, won the league and did a remarkable job at Dortmund, but had far more resources at his hands. What Alonso has done, do you think someone like Pep Guardiola or Jürgen Klopp could have gone to a Bayer Leverkusen and done what he's done?
I do, yeah. I definitely do. Because I think that is what he does. Obviously, he's been to the top clubs in the world and obviously he's spent money. But even when you look at him at Barcelona, when he went there, they was going through turmoil. There was players that wasn't good for the dressing room. And then he brought the likes of Busquets through. He brought those youngsters through. And he turned them into...
So they had them, right?
And
then they had them. I'm not denying that, but they were there already in the system, Phil, right? They were there at the club and he identified players and he brought them through.
But that's what I mean. At Bayer Leverkusen, he probably would have done the same thing. And one thing I was saying, that everyone talks about the players he's brought in, but look at the players he creates as well. I mean, like, even at Man City, he's Cole Palmer, Phil Foden, Rico Lewis. You know, he's made some really good players from the
afterwards, right? I think initially, no. So initially he brought all these players in, created a foundation, the team were winning, and then they've started to bring these players through. I mean, I don't know if that was intentional or what, but there's no denying that he spent absolute fortunes in creating the team that he has got. There's also no denying, you're right, Phil Foden, Rico Lewis, all these guys have been phenomenal. And he's been a big part. I mean, Phil Foden is a great example where he's talked about Phil Foden from a very young age and about how he's going to manage him and how well he's going to, how good a player he's going to become. And that is no doubting at all. I mean, we'll never know, right? But wherever Pep's gone, he's gone to the biggest clubs and the clubs with the most resources, the most possibilities of attracting the best players. I just think what Xavi Alonso has done at Bayer Leverkusen is, Phil, off the charts.
Good. I'm glad you finally said it and, you know, put some, if not respect on it, but giving it the magnitude that it deserves, because it is the most exceptional thing that I've seen in European football for quite some time. So congratulations to them. I don't follow German football. I don't really watch it. I know you keep your eyes on it, Schwartzy, but from afar, I just think that it's something that we might never see again. So congratulations to him. And I'm quite excited that I think we might be seeing Xavi Alonso either in the Premier League or in La Liga pretty soon. So I'll be excited to see what he can do when he comes.
I mean, they tore Werder Bremen apart yesterday 5-0. Florian Wirtz scored his first ever hat-trick to win the Bundesliga title, which is just crazy. 16 points clear with five games to go. So who knows if that extends or doesn't. But it's a remarkable accomplishment for a team like that. Okay, so who's going to win the Premier League title? Has anything changed? I mean, I'm still sticking with City. I said it all along. I think City's going to win it. But it's not done with, of course.
I mean, I think we all agree with that. They're a fantastic team. And you know what I love about City? They seem to kick into gear every year at the right time. You know, everyone was talking about their inconsistencies this year, you know, their injuries this year. But they seem to just get results and they seem to kick into gear. Everyone seems to be confident at the right time. Yes, Haaland's not in the form he was last year, but there's a lot of other players that are really performing well. And, you know, the likes of Doku that came, you know, he played against Luton the other day and he was frightening. He was frightening. I would hate... Doku's one of those players you just don't want to play against as a fullback. He can go left, he can go right, and he's so quick. He slows the defenders down and then he's gone. Foden, again, fantastic. De Bruyne, he didn't even start against Real Madrid and he does a job. I think the thing about Guardiola, the reason why he's such a good manager is because he keeps all of his players happy. All of his players believe in what he does. You never see a player coming off and throwing their shirt like we've seen with like the likes of Rashford. You never see players arguing. Players just accept that he's going to rotate the team. He keeps everyone happy, but then he plays football that is just a joy to watch. A joy to watch. I even hear people saying, oh, they're boring now, just because you know they're going to do the same thing all the time. But it's such a joy to watch. I love the way they play. I love the way they attack. I love the way they break teams down. And even when they're in losing positions, they just say, yeah, okay, then we're going to beat you. We're going to score at some point. They're a great team. They're going to win the league. And at me being an Arsenal fan, everyone was saying to me from Christmas time in February, this is the year Arsenal are going to do it. This is the year. And I was just saying, I'm not sure. Because when Arsenal seem to slip away, it's not against the big sides. It's against the sides they should win against. And then they don't get the result. So for me, it's easily Man City again.
Yeah, I did a bit of a U-turn last week because I've been back in Liverpool. And then after that performance at Old Trafford, I felt like the whole emotion of the Klopp situation was getting to them. And I could see it there. And we've seen it again. I mean, they've lost two games after that as well. So it doesn't feel like anything's getting better for them. Arsenal fell apart in April last year. And they've got a really massive, massive 7 days coming up because if they go out of the Champions League and then drop points away to Wolves, their season is more or less over. Wolves, who have beaten Manchester City, they've got points against Spurs and Villa at home, so that's not an easy game. And yeah, this is all my roundabout way of, you know, with a heavy, heavy heart, saying I think Manchester City are now going to win the league, and I didn't believe it, but yeah.
Phil, we spoke about this briefly the other day on the phone, but Mark, I was saying, you know, when Arsenal played Man City the other day, Arsenal clearly went there with the attitude as, we want to get a draw. We don't want to get beat. We want to get a draw. And I said this to Phil. I said, as much as it was a great point in hindsight, I was a bit disappointed in the way that they approached the game. I believe Arsenal, you know, in boxing, when you say, styles make fights. I think Arsenal has the players, the squad, to go and play against Man City and get a win, just like Liverpool did against Man City and they got a draw. I would have liked Arsenal to go for that game more than they did. And I said that to Phil, but he was like, nah, you know, what they did was good. What do you think, Mark?
I wonder if it's a response to last season, falling away, being that close, feeling like they'd lost it. I wonder if it's kind of that in the back of their mind. But I agree what Phil was saying. I think the idea of going, okay, let's go there. Let's not completely set up to just hold on to a draw. Let's try and hit them. They created enough chances. They could have, you know, on another day possibly got more out of the game, but on another day they could have lost the game more heavily. I think it was well played to a large degree. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. You can go back and look at it now and go, well, they should have gone for more, but they could have lost that game. And then they would have lost against Villa. And then, because you're chasing, then you chase, and then it makes it even more difficult.
Jay was saying to me, you know, oh, they should have gone for it. And I said, no, it's a good point. And he said, well, it's a good point if you win the league. And if you don't end up winning the league, it actually turns out to be a bad result. And I still think, you know, Arsenal had to have.
They're the games you look back at and go, that was the moment where we won the league.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. I just look back and you say, like Phil just said, if they win the league, then you say, great tactics there from Arteta, you know. But then now I'm looking at it and I'm saying, well, if you had gone for Man City, you might have won the game. And then a game like this, okay, it's still disappointing, but I think you would have had more confidence from that, if I'm honest.
Technically, the title race is still very much on. There's just 2 points separating three teams. But it's just we're here sitting here saying it's over, it's finished. And I literally said at the top of the programme, it's over. But I think that's just testament to the power that Manchester City, that they have over us. We just believe in them. And I think the players believe in them and their opponents believe that they're going to win as well. So
even though Man City have more games, I think they're running of league games is much easier than Tottenham's and Arsenal's and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Arsenal's is a really tough one. Amongst others, Wolves away, but they've got Chelsea at home, Tottenham away, Bournemouth at home, Man United away, and then Everton last game of the season. Okay, but that game, Man United, Spurs, and the Chelsea games, I mean, even though Chelsea are nowhere near it, you just don't know what you're going to get from them. They're tough, tough games.
This is good, by the way. I think we need to keep talking about the title race, and we've done, you know, 38 minutes or so. So we don't need to speak about Spurs this weekend.
well,
let's just talk about the title
now
race.
Now that you've
title
brought
race.
It up.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, Phil, perfect timing. Timing is everything in life, right?
No.
So 4-0 away to Newcastle. Look, there's no hiding. Spurs play like Spurs play. Ange Postecoglou is not going to change. He does not have a plan. Well, plan B is to do plan A better. That's plain and simple. So it's a high line. being exploited on a couple of through balls again for Spurs. Not happened too many times. Well, it's happened a few times this season, but they've generally got away with it. And a couple of times they've been punished. Is this what you're going to expect from Spurs? The good with, and the bad with it, right? The excitement, the high line, the energy, and then every now and then you're going to get exploited like you did against Newcastle, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, Ange said after the game, you know, it's part of the process. It's painful, but there are going to be defeats like that as the team continue to learn and adapt. And hearing that from a fan's perspective is quite difficult to take and to listen to. But I mean, it's part of the process. And if we believe in what Ange is doing, I mean, you want to stick with him, and then okay, you have to trust him and say that okay, this is part of the process. Stepping away from that and looking at it from a fan's perspective, on Saturday, it was one of the most disappointing games I've seen for a long time from Spurs, because this was, for my money, Spurs' strongest starting 11. Strongest starting 11 is out there playing or not playing, because they did everything wrong. Like, they had 73% possession. They didn't really do anything with it. They looked very, very exposed at the back. There were some individual errors, and the second goal for Newcastle comes from a deeply unfunny comedy of errors from Spurs, you know, with Mickey van der Ven falling on his backside. Again, happened more than once in the game. It was a very poor individual performance from him. And Newcastle just knew exactly what they had to do. They knew exactly what they had to do to beat Spurs. And they could have scored more as well. They looked so comfortable. They looked so comfortable, and Spurs were properly found out at the weekend. And it was massively, massively disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think I was in Japan, obviously, like we all know, for a number of years, and I actually became a bit friendly with Ange. And what he said to me was, he said the tactics that he uses is obviously a pressing way. They want to press as much as they can all the time. But he said the formula to win those games is the concentration of the back line. You have to be fully focused for 90 minutes, because like we see, one long ball over the top and Isak was running onto it one-on-one with a keeper. And if you're going to win the game and play like that, he's going to have a high line all the time. But you need to be in a position where you're always focused. And I think with that back line there, there's a lot of, you know, they're young still, really. They're young and they're learning his way. And that way he plays is just not easy. I think going forward, they can still be better. Like I said earlier, Maddison hasn't hit that form that he was on before. And he is absolutely key. Is key for me. Even Bissouma coming back and Saar, they haven't been like they were at the beginning of the season. And again, you know, I can't help but I have to be critical of Timo Werner. I'm sorry, he misses so many good chances, and those chances that he misses are, you know, they can change games. Technically, he's one of the worst players in the Premier League, and I'm going to say that because I honestly believe that it seems like he don't cross the ball well. He hits it as hard as he can across the face of the goal all the time. He never picks nobody out. His finishing's poor. His passing's poor. And, you know, yes, you can say he's effective, but then I'm saying, okay, he's an athlete. I mean, in this day and age, I look at him and I say he's effective because he's that athleticism. As he gets older, when he loses that athleticism, how effective is he going to be then? And I feel like if Richarlison's back, Son will go to the left, he'll be out of the team, then I think they'll be better going forward, because then you've got some players that you can play link-up play with, that you can work with. And then you've got, when Richarlison was playing, he was great for Tottenham. I'm sorry. And I said this early on in the season. I said, if he can start being disciplined in the middle, he will score goals, because he's good in the air. He gets them like ugly goals, them tap-ins. He can score a great goal. I think he would be, and I think Tottenham have missed that, because now you're playing Son up front. He doesn't have, he's a great player. He doesn't have that discipline where he's going to stay between the two defenders, because a player of his ability wants to get involved in the game. And that's why I feel like Tottenham don't have their strongest side. Richarlison's in that strongest 11 now.
Yeah, but Tony, I mean, okay, so there's one player missing. Every team at the moment is pretty much struggling with all their having their first 11 on the pitch. Not many of them do actually at this moment in time. when you look at Spurs' remaining fixtures, oh my God. I mean, four of the next five games, they've got Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, Liverpool away. They've got Burnley at home in between there. And then they've got Manchester City at home before they play Sheffield United away last game of the season. Does it get any more difficult for Spurs between now and the end of the season, Phil?
Not really. that's a pretty terrifying set of fixtures. I mean, listen, Spurs have done pretty well in some of those reverse fixtures that we've seen earlier on in the season. At the first half of the season, they played really well against Manchester City. There was a thrilling defeat against Chelsea. But yeah, it feels like, you know what, Spurs don't even have the excuse of fatigue, do they? To say that they're tired because they didn't have a League Cup run. They were knocked out of the FA Cup by Manchester City. They've not been in Europe. So these players shouldn't be fatigued at all. They should be fresh and raring to go. And yet I'm not feeling very confident at all when it comes to that running and trying to get top four. Who knows? Maybe we'll be surprised. But I guess, listen, top four is not the be-all and end-all, as I think that's what Andrew's trying to get across. You know, trust the process. We have improved from where we were last season. That's what he was saying. And there should be better progress next season with a full summer of bringing in players that he wants, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not all about getting top four for Spurs, but it would feel a little bit disappointing if we were pipped by Aston Villa.
Phil, can I ask you a question? Because I know a lot of Tottenham fans being from North London, and they said that they're happy to be playing attacking football right now, scoring goals, expansive. Yeah, they're going to get thumped now and again, but like you said, it is a process. But they're just happy to be playing attacking football now because the previous managers, everyone was saying they're defensive. So I think, like you said, I think it is a process. I believe Ange is a top manager. I really do. And I think that the only way is up for Tottenham. Like you said, they've come on leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the first few months of the season, everyone was kind of giddy with Ange Ball and everyone was just like, wow, this is amazing. This is so much different to what it was last season. We absolutely love this. Look at us. We're exciting. Yeah, we might lose, but we're going for it. We're playing a certain way. We love this. And then it's getting to sort of the business end of the season. We're thinking, well, we want this to sort of mean for something tangible, i.e. getting into the Champions League. That would be such a big thing for this club. And it's open. It's there. Like fourth spot is really open this season and Spurs could get it. So being so close makes fans kind of like distorts their vision. So at the start of the season, everybody was like that. And now people, I think, wouldn't mind grinding out a few 1-0 wins if it meant getting Champions League football. But we know with Ange, that's not the style. That's not going to happen. And we've got to embrace it and accept it.
Well, you look at their run, those next three games, the three games against so Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, Liverpool away, are all over the course of 7 days, those three games. So that is going to really test them, and that will be a defining moment as to whether or not they actually still contest Villa for that fourth place. Villa, by the way, have got Bournemouth away, Chelsea at home, which is important, Brighton away, Liverpool at home, and then Palace away. So certainly in the box seat, have one game fewer than Spurs to play, but 3 points clear. So watch this space, and the good thing about it is hopefully it'll go down to the wire and it'll be very exciting. But looking at those next three fixtures for Spurs, it might be done before then. What do you reckon? What do you reckon, Jay? You hope so.
Hope so.
The good news is that Man United probably won't catch us. That's the good
Well,
news.
Let's move on to Man United and very much about that. Man United season, the way that they've been playing, hit or miss, don't look like they're not going to make a Champions League position. Let's be honest. I don't think so. Does anyone here think that Erik ten Hag will keep his job or will he be sacked come the end of the season? Jay, you're shaking your head.
There's no way he's keeping his job. There's just no way. The new owners coming in, you know, they've already started speaking about potential managers. There was Graham Potter. I said Harry Potter, you know. Graham Potter that was has been talked about, you know, amongst other managers as well. But for me, I think you have to look at the players. I think the players' body language is just not right. You can see that they don't believe in him. I mean, you've even seen in the media over the last few days where Garnacho is, you know, kind of being disrespectful in a roundabout way by retweeting you know, stuff that's negative towards Ten Hag. Rashford, we've seen that. I mean, he went out partying. That's just like a lack of respect. You know, there's rules there. So, you know the rules. You can't go out after a Wednesday night. The fact that he's taken a private jet to Ireland to have a night out and then come back and then he's ill, he's obviously hungover. That's why he hasn't tried.
I think it's a bit harsh. Done it a couple of times. He just didn't do it once.
But this is the thing. I look at Ten Hag. When he came in, yes, he got a few good results. Yeah, I mean, in his opinion, he got rid of the likes of Ronaldo, who was troublesome in the dressing room. But I think we've seen that. I don't think it actually was Ronaldo. I think Ronaldo was doing his job and he had high expectations. I don't see the philosophy in which he talked about when he came in. It's not there. Man United have not got any better since he came in. They don't have an identity. They don't have a style. When you look at these other teams that we've spoken about, the likes of Tottenham, the likes of Aston Villa, Brighton, these teams, the managers come in and endorsed a philosophy and you see a changed style and a mentality to the team. With that, I don't see Ten Hag. How can they have the most shots faced against them in the Premier League? The most shots, Man United Football Club. It's unbelievable. It really is. They're just not on it at all. I'm sorry as well. Phil, what do you think about Casemiro? Because he looks like he's carrying a caravan on his back now. I'm sorry. He wasn't moving properly at all. I don't know whether it's injuries or because he's been out or whatnot, but he doesn't look like he's match sharp at all. I think Ten Hag has to go in order to give these players a new lease of life and play with happiness on their faces again.
Someone said that Casemiro looked like he was playing in Soccer Aid, which I thought was a little bit harsh.
That was Jamie Redknapp, wasn't it?
Right? Yeah. But listen, Manchester United are going backwards. Like, they finished third last season. They're 21 points off third at the moment. They're seventh. The worst season ever in the Premier League was when they finished seventh in the first year after Sir Alex Ferguson left. And they might not finish. They might finish eighth. Like, West Ham could overtake them. You wouldn't necessarily think that that's a ridiculous thing to happen. And it's just, they're going backwards. Like, no one is improving. There are young players coming through. There are some exciting shoots there. That is something positive for Manchester United. But Ten Hag isn't going to be there in the summer. I think everybody knows that. And it's just a really weird negative end to the season for Manchester United in the Premier League. They might get to the, they should get to the FA Cup final, which they'll probably lose. But, you know, it's just another season where they've just gone backwards.
So, okay, I'm going to go with Roberto Di Zerbi. I think he would be the perfect candidate to take over from Ten Hag coming into the season. Jay, what have you got?
Yeah, I had a conversation the other day. I actually think Di Zerbi would be good for Liverpool. I think his kind of style, the pressing game, I think that suits Liverpool.
Yeah, but Man United want to play that. Man United played that before. They want to go back to that. That's what was so difficult to play against Man United. They were so high pressing, so high energy. I think rather than just go, yeah, he fits Liverpool, I agree with you. That is almost like a natural slot in. But I think for Man United, it'd be perfect to get for someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think De Zerbi's a fantastic manager, to be honest. I like his style. I like the fact that he's a very much a disciplinarian, as in you can't take liberties with him. You can't be disrespectful. You know, you're there on time. And I think that's what Man United need. I think whatever club he goes to, he will get them playing really good football. I mean, no disrespect to Brighton players, but he's turned them into a great team to watch, you know, especially when they had all their players fit and available. He's turned Dunk into a full international that gets called up on a regular basis. Matoma, before his injuries, he was fantastic. Welbeck plays really well. And then they got the young players that they've recruited really well on. And he's got them looking like $1 million as well. I think he's a fantastic manager. And I think Man United, if they can get him, they should. But I think that he will be looking at Liverpool more than Man United.
Phil, what do you got?
Do you know who's the bookie's favourite to be the next Manchester United manager? Now, I know this isn't the best indicator.
Go on.
But the bookie's favourite for the next Manchester United manager is Gareth Southgate.
Yes, he is, isn't he? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's been heavily linked because of his relationship with Ratcliffe, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not sure about that. I don't know. Yeah, Roberto De Zerbi does. He's I think he's fourth favorite. But there's some pretty wild names here on the list. I'm not a gambling man, but Gareth Southgate is first, then Graham Potter, then Thomas Tuchel, then Nagelsmann, and then De Zerbi. So yeah, there are some interesting names there. It's just such a huge. I mean, listen, it's a huge job because of the prestige and the size of the club and the history, and we know it's Manchester United, for goodness sake. But it's also a huge job in terms of like rebuilding. Like, I'm not saying managers won't want it, but managers will look at that and think, "Whoa, it's such an enormous task on my hands that it might make certain people think twice about it." So I don't know who it's going to be. De Zerbi sounds like a good shout, but
I think that's an easier job than Liverpool.
What, coming after the legendary Klopp, and he's been there for so long, and yeah, they're both. It's both difficult. But listen, you're basically still trying to replace Alex Ferguson, and they've been doing it for a decade, and they still haven't done it. So,
but that's part of the issue, yeah. Right? Trying to replace someone from a different era, really, almost now. And I think everything's moved on. And forget about trying to replace someone; it's about now recreating that identity, going back to an identity they just haven't found. It they've lost it for a long period of time. Liverpool, we all know Jurgen Klopp's moving on, that's all been said. Who is, give us one name really short, who's going to take over at Liverpool, Phil? Who's your money on?
Ruben Amorim, been practicing, the manager of a sporting club in Portugal. Sounds like he's pretty well placed to take over.
Jay?
De Zerbi,
you're saying De Zerbi at Liverpool. I'm saying Amorim as well. Seems like that. All the indications are. I mean, even though he's come out and denied that he hasn't agreed anything, but hasn't denied that he hasn't been in talks, right? So Chelsea's the next one, right? Next big one. A lot of talk about the squad, Mauricio Pochettino, how he's dealt with it or hasn't dealt with it. I'm going to say he'll be there next season. Jay?
I think he'll be there next season, especially from the start. I think they need to give him a bit more time. I think, yeah, I'm very friendly with Joe Cole, for example, and I speak to him a lot about Chelsea, and we were saying the same thing, that Chelsea have a lot of good players. They actually have a very, very good squad. I don't think they're getting the most out. I don't think Pochettino's getting the most out of them at the moment. And that's a worry, but I think he will be there to begin with. And then I think depending on how they progress at the start of the season will depend on if he gets in the window.
Yep, fully agree. I think Pochettino will be there to start on next season, but he will be under big pressure.
Right, we're off for a break right now. And when we're back, we've got a big preview of this weekend's El Clasico.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Monday morning, 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, El Clasico kicks off for the last time this season. Off the back of Real Madrid winning 1-0 away at Mallorca, Barcelona 1-0 as well away, this time against Cardiff, and João Félix scoring an absolute brilliant overhead scissor kick. Real Madrid host Barcelona in what is effectively a last-ditch chance for Barcelona to keep in touch with the title. Can Barcelona win, Phil?
They can. They can. If they win, they move to within 5 points of Real Madrid, which is still, I don't think, going to be enough for them to win the title. I think Real Madrid are in a very, very strong position given the games that they have left. But still, winning would put a little bit of pressure on them coming into the business end of the season. I think Xavi will absolutely be desperate to win his final Clásico as a Barcelona manager. He had a really, really great result. His best result ever as a manager came a couple of years ago in this fixture when they won 4-0 at the Bernabeu. They are unbeaten in La Liga since he announced he was leaving on the 27th of January. They have been in good form. Their key players have been playing better. So Ter Stegen is back in goal, making big saves. They've kept 6 consecutive clean sheets. And Robert Lewandowski is back scoring and just being generally more involved as well. Add to that the fact that Lamine Yamal is flourishing and João Félix is beginning to look interested as well. And he seems to raise himself for the big game, so it's always one to watch out for. So can they win? Yes. Will it necessarily have any sort of effect on the title? I don't think so, but it's still a, it's always a fascinating game, this, because of it's more about more than just the football. We know that, Mark. You and I went to the last one in Barcelona, and it's a fixture that encompasses history and society and culture and politics more than any other. And then out on the pitch, it's often a really good game. And the first game, Barcelona dominated Real Madrid for 65 minutes. They took the lead, and then Jude Bellingham scored twice. The second one was late on, and Real Madrid had a bit of a smash-and-grab job. So there's lots of interesting facets to this game. I'm interested to see if João Félix can raise his game, if he's involved, because he scored the winner against Atletico Madrid, scored a beautiful goal against Cadiz, as you mentioned, and he's someone that likes the big games. He likes the spotlight. And I'm really interested to see Jude Bellingham as well, because his form has dipped a little bit. Not according to his manager, who said the form's okay, he's just not scoring goals anymore, which he was at the start of the season, which wasn't normal. Hasn't scored for 2.5 months, and I think he'll be very keen to sort of get back on track in that kind of regard, and it's the best fixture to do so. So, yeah, but there's a big asterisk with this Clásico Schwarzy, and that is both teams are playing in the Champions League quarterfinal second leg in midweek, which will kind of condition and determine how they approach this game. If they both get knocked out of the Champions League, this will take on added significance. If they both make it through, then, you know, it will perhaps be not quite as important. So yeah, it's interesting to see what happens in midweek before we then fully understand how they're going to approach the game.
It's El Clasico, Phil, isn't it? I mean, it's bragging rights. There's so much on the line, right? So regardless almost of what happens midweek as well, Xavi's last game in El Clasico. Sell it to us. Why are we watching? Why are we tuning in? If you're saying they're potentially only 5 points behind, possibly even 11 points behind Real Madrid after the game, depending on the result, why are we tuning in to watch it?
Oh, because it is a title decider. This is the title decider. Real Madrid win this and they have won La Liga. They move 11 points clear of Barcelona. If Barcelona were to win, 5 points is probably not going to be enough, but it would put a little bit of pressure on Real Madrid, who do have a relatively comfortable run in. But still, watch to see Barcelona try and put the pressure on. Watch to see some of the best players in the world, Vinicius Junior, Jude Bellingham. We might get a cameo from Luka Modric, who's a personal favourite of mine, who I absolutely love. Pedri, one of the best midfielders in the world. And Robert Lewandowski, who's still got it. You've got Ter Stegen, who's, you know, possibly, for my money, the best goalkeeper in the world, along with Courtois, who's injured. There are still top quality players in this fixture on both sides. The atmosphere is going to be vicious. It's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. The Bernabeu ceiling is going to be closed. You're going to be able to feel the animosity through the TV screen. Believe me, it's not going to be
Hope you're pleasant. Going, Phil.
there was a slight oversight with the, producer who didn't necessarily ask for accreditation for Ouch. Me in time. So why'd you bring that up, Jay? No, I'm not going. I couldn't get accredited in time. We forgot, basically. Sure. There was a lack of communication.
Surely of all your connections at Real Madrid TV, surely you should be in the back door somewhere.
Yeah, you would think so. You'd think so, Mark. But obviously that is not on the cards at the moment, but you never know.
Jay, Jude Bellingham, will he put in another match-turning moment like he did last time round? Like Phil mentioned there, he scored two goals. He hasn't scored for 2.5 months, but will this be the game? Because this is the occasion, right, that he has thrived in over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think, again, I need to see, Jude Bellingham is a fantastic player. I think his maturity and the way he plays is way ahead of his years. He's an athlete, he's strong, he's got skill, he can finish. But like Phil said, he hasn't scored for a few months now. Which is worrying, to be honest, because I think that's what his game at Real Madrid is based around, getting forward, getting them goals and creating. In the Champions League game the other day, he didn't play well against Man City at all. He was, you know, I don't want to say non-existent, but, they were in England, it was billed like Foden and Bellingham kind of thing, and he didn't step up to the plate at all. This is a game where if he can have a great game, it's going to give him a buzz. It's going to give him that confidence again. And he's going to be back on, cloud nine again. But Phil, like you were saying, I think Barcelona can win the game. They've got fantastic players. They keep the ball really well. But of late, when I've watched the El Clasicos, it just seems like Real Madrid are happy with Barcelona having the ball and dominating possession. But it seems like they've always got their number when you look at the likes of Vinicius, Rodrigo, that pace where they can just almost say, you know what, you have the ball, we're going to play counter-attack football. And as the game goes on and it becomes, you know, more like a basketball match, because if both teams are chasing it, you know, I think Real Madrid have more arsenal to go and get the result. And I feel like watching the El Clasicos of late, that's what always happens.
Yeah, it might be a little bit different at the Bernabeu with Real Madrid wanting to try and dictate play a little bit. But listen, if Barcelona leave space, Real Madrid have got some of the best players in the world to try and exploit that space. So I'm sure Xavi will come up with an idea to try and not give them space and maintain possession as well. Often we've seen him play Ronald Araujo, the big Uruguayan centre-back. He's put him as right-back specifically to try and deal with Vinicius Junior. And that's been a really interesting battle in recent Clasicos. So yeah, it's still a great fixture. I know we don't have the little Argentinian fella, and I know the Portuguese fella's gone as well from Real Madrid. It might not have that stardust that it once had, but it remains a huge game with some quality players, and everyone in Australia should wake up nice and early on Monday morning to watch it.
That's a massive game. I tell you what, it's going to be a high scoring game this time as well, I think.
Other interesting news out of the La Liga, certainly from last weekend's results, was Atletico de Madrid beating Girona 3-1. Always watch hashtag always watch Girona still, because they are very entertaining to watch. Your mate Antoine Griezmann scored a double, Phil. Which means Atletico are now 4 points ahead of Athletic Club Bilbao in the race for the fourth place Champions League position. Bilbao only managed a 1-1 draw at home to Villarreal. What a game that was. I mean, Villarreal missed a penalty, then had a player sent off. Bilbao took the lead, then Villarreal scored in the 95th minute from a penalty spot.
From a pretty dodgy penalty as well. It's not one that I would have been very happy to have been on the receiving end. But yeah, I mean, Athletic Club coming off the back of winning their Copa del Rey, they had been partying all week, to be honest. They had a million people in the streets in Bilbao on Thursday.
That's everyone. No one was at home.
Mate, that's half the population of the whole Basque country. It was ridiculous. So for them to get anything out of this game, I thought they were all going to be tired, hungover, and not at the races at all. So they got something out of the game. But yeah, it is looking like Atletico Madrid are going to get fourth spot, which is absolutely massive for them. And Girona's going to finish top four as well. So that's going to be a huge, huge achievement for them too.
I had lots of my friends from Bilbao in the streets celebrating with all the Bilbao fans, part of that 1 million people watching the game. So yeah, they enjoyed themselves as well. Got lots of videos of it. Just another one, big win for Sevilla away to Las Palmas, 2-0, means that Sevilla now 9 points clear of relegation with 7 games to go. So it looks like they should be okay. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Jay. Remember, Optus Sport is the only place you can watch the Premier League title race, La Liga, J League, K League, and the WSL live, as well as the Euro 24 and Copa America in a few months' time. See you next week on the Optus Sport Football Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.